Good morning. My name is Robert Renault, and I'm the CIO at Dickinson College and a member of the program committee for EDUCAUSE 2010. It's my great pleasure to welcome you this morning to Data Center is So Last Century. And our speaker and provocateur this morning will be Pam McQuestion, CIO at Occidental College. Let's begin the session.
Okay, the first thing I'm going to do is stand up. I came in here to this room and I saw these chairs. They're comfortable club chairs. I like club chairs when I have a gin and tonic. But 8 a.m. seemed a little early for the gin and tonic, so I decided I'd stand up for this presentation. I'm also hoping that we get some interaction from the back. I just remarked to Norma Holland here that I don't know about y'all, but this is a longer aisle than I walked down when I got married. And this is just really surprised me when I looked at the size of the room. But welcome at 8 a.m. after hopefully a good night last night and a great day at the conference. I wanted to talk to you today about why I think owning a data center is something that went out when we passed 1999. So why would we have a new data center? All right, there are lots of reasons why people might be thinking about this, going through with what they're doing. The building that we have is too small, that we're out of room. It's a magnet for consolidation. If you're for a large institution, you probably lust after getting everybody's servers all consolidated in some place on your campus. You have a very out-of-date data center, huge power consumption, massively difficult to cool. You have the availability of money, capital funds, or perhaps it's just, why not? So I'm going to credit the University of Texas at Austin for coming up with a great set of benefits for why everybody on campus wins with a new data center. I mean, they think it turns around and frees up some scarce financial resources. I think they're talking about consolidation. Frees up space. I thought that was sort of interesting, reclaiming space for academic needs. I've never thought about what was used as a data center being used for a classroom, but perhaps that's possible. We can increase our security, which is a big issue for us, support sustainability. What was very interesting to me about all of these reasons is there's not a single one here that says employ more construction workers. Help the concrete industry. We need more buildings on campus because we filled all of our deferred maintenance requests and our facilities group needs something to do. So I want to give some credit here to Reed Sherrod, who put this great article together in EDUCAUSE Quarterly about cloud computing. So I was reading through that, and it made me think that if I were looking at a data center, I would be thinking about the 21st century, not the last century. And he talked about that we needed to think about institutional efficiencies, working with smart disruptive partners. Eliminating infrastructure shows up here twice as pieces we need to do. And embrace while researching access and security questions. Again, none of these things say anything about something physical. So I'm beginning to think that all of us are definitely moving into a 21st century approach. So what is 21st century, our new world? We're doing it. At the sessions yesterday and today, you hear about remote hosting and virtualization, moving things into the cloud. The fact that our technology is being consumerized and commodified. We've got great economies of scale. California State University, the ECAR Bulletin in 2002, their huge implementation of PeopleSoft run out of a data center in Utah. It's perfectly successful, working wonderfully for them. Rackspace, Google Apps, Salesforce.com, it goes on and on. You're all familiar with this, and obviously, higher education is rapidly moving into the cloud, into a new way of doing business. But then I ran across this. Someone was building 147 square feet of data center at a massive cost. There must be some other reason here. Why in this day and age would somebody be doing this? And who would this be? Must be a really traditional operation, a corporation or a school that's still rooted in the last century? Well, it's Facebook. Our 21st century corporation, our social media giant. Why do they want a physical infrastructure? And this is what I found so interesting. It's the cachet that comes from opening a data center. Have any of you seen the movie about social networks? So one of the things you might see if you get in there with Mark Zuckerberg of looking at this is going that status and standing in the community means a lot. So this is much like buying your own home rather than renting it. This is like putting a Hummer in your driveway to show everyone that you've made it. But does that happen in higher ed? Well, let me give you a tale of two schools. So one, both of these schools have just recently completed new physical brick and mortar data centers. And they're designed to ensure the safety and security, I love the phrase, the most prized networking, computer processing, and data storage. They also explain with all of this, this huge investment in the $30 millions of dollars, not the hundred and some millions of dollars, but $30 million, it's going to not reach capacity for at least 3 to 5 years. Fantastic investment. And then it's going to withstand everything we can throw at it, including an F5 tornado. So this is beginning to say, maybe data centers aren't just about data centers. Maybe they really are about status. So my hypothesis, my proposition here is that geeks have always envied the jocks. On every major campus across the country, and especially at some very large campuses, we have these highly concrete, very physical memorials to athletic prowess. That on many weekends, fans come and worship at these memorials, and the jocks rule. And those of us who are in the geek world labor in the back office with invisible packets, with things that people can't see, desperately looking for a fan base. Well, with a data center, geeks can now have monuments too. And at these two institutions, we have a bunker-style monument that will be standing here and withstanding F5 tornadoes, by the way, probably long after the football stadium. And at another institution, they color-coordinated the inside of the data center with their school colors. But, you know, jocks also have fan websites where their fans can come and hear about their latest accomplishments and read of what they've done. And I'm sure geeks and data centers don't have that. But lo and behold, both institutions have great fan websites for their data centers, complete with photo galleries of the insides and outsides and the construction, remarks by users, a place to come and worship. They're equating the same status. So in thinking about football, I ran across this wonderful book about the history, spectacle, and controversies about football that John Watterson wrote in 2002. And he talks about how this culture has brought fame to institutions, but it's also placed heavy burdens on administrations and on their academic credibility. We are 8 years and 1 month later since he made this quote. And Pam McQuestion at Educause is saying that the data center culture has brought name recognition to our IT organizations, but it's placed very heavy burdens on their institutions as well as their service capability. So back to those of us who know how to live in the 21st century. This was from a study from a group of electrical engineering and computer science faculty at Berkeley talking about the cloud. What's interesting here is they're so excited saying innovation can now happen without these large capital outlays in hardware and these large outlays in specially trained personnel. They don't even bother to mention a physical facility. I mean, that's even off the table. They're just saying you no longer even have to buy the servers. And that we don't have to think about provisioning for services and making sure we're exactly right. Remember that 3 to 5 year time frame for the use of that data center? We don't have to think about that way because we've got the cloud. However, one of the things they did, they also identified a lot of the obstacles that are being discussed here in the trades, in lots of conversations among all of us, about what are the issues that are keeping us from moving more things into the cloud. And this doesn't show up very well, but the title of the third column over here says opportunity. What they identified as a way of obstacles is we need to invent scalable store. We need to turn around and make compatible software for surge computing. They came up with all of the opportunities that they see for innovation in computer science and engineering to make the cloud work. What does that mean for us? Well, I would like us to think briefly about higher education and IT. Higher education has this rich, incredible history of innovation in IT. Whether it is high-performance computing, microcomputers that came into classrooms and to research, the ARPANET, what we've done with Internet 2 and virtualized conferencing, Mosaic. We could go on and on. I'm sure every one of you could hold up your hands with 3 and 4 kinds of things that IT innovation in higher education institutions has moved not only our institutions forward, our profession forward, but have made differences that have affected the entire world. We are famous for doing this. We are incredibly good at doing this. So when we're thinking about data centers, we have a choice. We can continue to build and preserve our geek models of jock envy, putting them wherever we are on campus or that, so last century. Or we can use to take our resources, our dollars, our time, and build real accomplishments by innovating in moving materials to the cloud and getting away from physical data centers and pushing that and actually acting in the century that we're living in. And that is my proposition. So I invite you, this session is to argue with me, not just to listen to me. Questions? Arguments? Okay.
We just built a data center. By the way, you can go back to the stadium.
Could you please use the microphone? Somebody has just identified themselves as from Indiana University.
Okay. You know, there's actually, I go back to a couple of your slide that puts the arguments on why you shouldn't build a data center, and I would say they actually identify arguments that one should build a data center. I think one agrees that aggregation, virtualization, and cloud is absolutely where you want to be. But I also think all of the concerns about privacy, security, as well as cost, as that you identify, that the right thing to do is look at cloud computing from an institutional perspective. And I'm talking about multi-campuses, multi-institutions, statewide system components. So absolutely, one of the visions of building a large data center, besides protecting, you know, $30 or $50 million worth of IT investment that's already there, is to be able to aggregate those services at that kind of scale level. And for instance, one of the things we do in that data center is provide a DR capability to the state of Indiana into that facility from their data center. So those are kind of the counter arguments for that. Not to mention the whole issue that research infrastructure is still very important. So immediately upon building the $32 million data center, we received a $15 million grant from NSF to house functionability. It seems like you investment actually turns back into dollars coming back in. And yeah, maybe we also send some dollars to the concrete industry, and I would argue that that's not such a bad idea either.
Okay, that's a really good point. I would turn around, I think, especially where do you know your economies of scale come from? So Indiana's decided that your economies of scale come from your institution, other higher education institutions in Indiana, state institutions in Indiana, and then it stops at the border. And is that the right ratio for economies of scale? Should the, how many data centers, and I would grant that we need data centers, I'm just arguing that does every university need a data center? Does every state need a data center? Does every region need a data center? How many data centers do we really need to have? And so how do we turn around and do that? Question.
Okay. My name is Mike Notaris from SUNY. So I see peanut butter and I see chocolate. And when you put the two together, maybe the answer is not one or the other, but maybe it's both. So what if there's economies of scale? For a single campus or single institution, yes, this may make sense. But when you're part of a system and you have economies of scale, maybe it is better to go ahead and maybe you are the internal cloud. Additionally, so to bring it more together, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go out and build a data center. There was this whole .com that happened 10 years ago. There's data centers out there for pennies on the dollar. So now you don't have to worry about capacity. You don't have to worry about building it. You don't have to worry about, you know, power and cooling and all that. There's opportunities to do that in a hybrid model. So I say take the best from both worlds.
Well, let me respond to your availability of data centers everywhere. If you go to Florida, there are a ton of houses available, and most of them are standing empty. In fact, there are entire subdivisions available and on the market. So we could talk about owning those to live in, or we could talk about investing in those to rent out those houses to other people. So I think the other question here is, I'm arguing that our capital outlays should go for other kinds of structures, because in IT space, we can actually rent rather than own.
Hi. Hello.
You're
John
here.
Bartleson from WPI. I actually agree with you. my question is, I come from a mid-sized university. We have a data center. Are you advocating that we just ride out our current data centers, or do we just rip everything out right now? Because my concern on the second point is it's that costs money, is to be able to, since we have an infrastructure that we've already built and is working, and aside from the power and cooling and greening aspects, it's going to cost some significant dollars to pull a data center out. So your thoughts?
I come from a small institution, although I will claim the reason I picked on Indiana in particularly is because of a colleague, Norma Holland, and I had to give her a hard time. And I pick on the University of Texas at Austin because I also used to work there, so I picked my schools appropriately. But I come from a very small institution, and my general thought is that we have no business owning and operating a data center. That really is not in any ways, shape or form, part of our core mission. So my staff will tell you that if I hear the words remote hosting, I am racing down the road after this, whatever it is, trying to move in that direction. The hard problems I think we face are this transition. The hard problems are, what is the right ratio for economies of scale, right? What do we move and how do you make it safe and secure? And you were bringing up that point, and I turn around and say, that's our job to solve, not their job to solve. This is where we can innovate. This seems to be a bigger issue for higher education than it is for many corporations. So let's get on it and solve it and figure out a way to make that work. But I think we do. The transition part, there's a colleague of mine in this audience that we've had lots of conversations about how to start things from scratch. Or if things burn down, what would we do? That's the easy solution. You know, the hard solution is to deal with legacy. And how do we make that transition?
Hank Shotland, Portland Community College. Two factors. I'm not sure if they ended up on your list or not. One is that when you own your own data center, you have a highly trained staff of specialists, system administrators, operators, and so on, whose skills might not be easily applied to the rest of your work in an IT organization. For example, if you view software as the important differentiator for the next generation, most of those folks have no software background at all. The administrators might have a little bit. So that's point A. You have folks and you can't just fire them. Point B is economic. You talked about reallocating capital elsewhere. The way things work where I am, there is a capital budget and there's an operational budget. They're completely separate. If we don't spend capital dollars on a new data center, that doesn't mean we can take that money and rent space with it. And so where do we get the money for that rental? Because it's an amortized cost.
All right, let me see and talk to both of your points. I think your first point, I would turn around and say, we're all facing this. And I don't care whether it's systems administrative. We have people with fixed set of specialized skills that we're not going to need those skills 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road. So we have to, if you're lucky enough to be able to keep all of those people on your staff and expand your staff to accumulate the new skills, it's a very different situation than I'm facing. So I look and say, right now I have X amount of positions and X amount of dollars, and I've got to transition into a new age and new sets of skills. And so absolutely, some people are not going to be employed by Occidental anymore, because I have to do that in order to bring new skills to bear. The capital and the operational budget, I totally agree that they're very different on campuses, but this is in a larger way of having discussions with your CFO to say, you know, you can use these capital dollars, which for data centers are a lot. You can use these capital dollars over here on other institutional priorities, but here's where I need your help. What I'm doing is saying I won't have a call on those dollars anymore that you can use, but what I need is operational help on this side. That's also going to be, in the long run, a better solution for the institution. Other questions, arguments? Kyle.
So I think one of the other things...
You have to introduce yourself, even though I know who you
are.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Kyle Johnson. I'm the Associate Provost at SUNY Institute of Technology. One of the challenges that we have right now that we're working through that I think slows us down in this kind of transition is we are bandwidth constrained. You know, we have a D3 from Verizon, and that's it. So with 45 megs, you can't move your data center off campus because you just don't have enough bandwidth. And I suspect that there are a lot of rural institutions who face that kind of challenge. So I'm not sure kind of what we can do as CIOs, what we can do as EDUCAUSE to kind of help that along.
I think that's an issue, Kyle. I think one of the questions in trying to resolve that is, how is that bandwidth impacting the other services that you're offering the campus? Because your data center isn't providing everything that your campus is using for research and for instruction. So you've got reasons for traffic to be going to the rest of the world in your campus, and I think all of us would believe that that's going to do nothing but increase, that people need more packets, we need more bandwidth. So it may be that turning around and making the case for moving that data center is also a way to turn around and accelerate getting better bandwidth to your campus.
Hi, Ron Dodge from West Point. I'm the Associate Dean for IT. Kind of following up a little bit on that last question, what you didn't really hit on very well, I don't think, yet today, is what services should you be pushing out into the cloud from an EDU perspective, and what shouldn't you? So large data sets, long out in the cloud, well, certainly it's bandwidth dependent. PeopleSoft services, yeah, applications in the cloud are really not too significantly difficult to understand.
We're still exploring that. I think, and when I was pulling this together, it was more in looking at a philosophy and a direction in which I'm headed. So I think that that's part of what I'm questioning. It's not even that I was considering building a new data center. Interestingly enough, my data center is in the bottom floor of the administration building, which is really a dumb place to have it. And we have moved all the IT staff out of that building as a statement that eventually that data center won't be there anymore. So I think it's more of us turning around and saying, how are we as educational institutions going to say that this is definitely a part of our future? It's part of our collective future, which is back to the economies of scale. How do we collaborate and pull together to start not only moving things in that direction, but deciding what's appropriate and solving the problems that we need to move? I think of what we've done with Shibboleth, what we've done in other areas, this is what we need to do, moving things in the cloud. I can also talk something about economies of scale. It just occurred to me, I was at the Google event last night, and they announced 10 million people who are using Google Apps in education. And going, that's scale. All right. That scale, and there's their, come on, bring on, we want more, we can handle it, we can go. That scale.
Lorraine Frost, Cal State San Bernardino. The CSU is actually looking to pull back from Unisys right now. We're looking at bringing our data centers back to California and possibly doing a northern and southern region. And I guess I'm interested in what type of controls do we have to put in place because of service level agreements and the possibility of those cloud vendors disappearing in the cloud?
Well, I think my response back to you is say, why is this, what is it about the arrangement that the CSU had that is causing it to say what we want to do is come back in California and handle that in a different way?
Lack of performance.
Okay. Well, I think that again, Lorraine, most of the, I don't have answers. I don't have the ideal service level agreement. I don't have the ideal set of saying, here's exactly what belongs in the cloud and here's exactly what belongs on your campus. Because for one, I think some of that differs for the various institutions. Indiana was bringing this to a point. We may have requirements even if there's a granting agency that says, I want all of this to be local and this is how I'm funding you. So we have different requirements, but it's coming together and saying the philosophy is, we're moving in this direction. One of the things I thought about including in this presentation and didn't is I went back and did some research in LexisNexis by searching on MIS directors and microcomputers in newspapers and trade articles published in 1980 and 81. And it was a very interesting bifurcation from the MIS directors that said, in no way, shape, or form are we going to support anyone bringing one of those machines into our company and wanting to hook to our databases. On the other half, we're turning around and saying, this makes sense. We've got to figure out and work with them and find a way that microcomputers and mainframes work together for the company. So I'm very much advocating that secondary viewpoint, that 21st century viewpoint that says 15 years down the road, how many data centers are we going to have? 25 years down the road, how many data centers are we going to have? And how do we start moving in that direction? Another question.
Yeah, Steve DeFilippo, Vice President CIO at Cecil College in Maryland. We're addressing moving to a hardened high availability site as a part of our business continuity plan. So the question I ask in general is how many single points of failure do you have on your campus in terms of your data center? Because if you have one, you have a crisis waiting.
Right.
And just as a final thought, Wall Street runs its entire operation at a hardened high availability site in New Jersey. So if they can do it and they can manage security and performance, there's no reason why we can't.
I think that's an excellent point, and I think very much as we're looking around some of these services offering to millions of users, the scale level that they're using and operating, they are finding solutions for that. And I would like to see us partnering with people to do that. How are you doing this? How can we take advantage of this? Because we can't all pay for our own individual version of that. Microphone, please.
Just stop down at, and I'm not a proponent, I have no financial interest in this company, but SunGard does this. I mean, SunGard for the longest time ran all of Wall Street. It's now Rackspace, but SunGard High Availability Services, a different part of SunGard than SunGard Higher Ed, but they're now offering hosting services. So go talk to those guys. It's a good start.
I also want to bring up, I think, that piece of innovation that happens when people can move, and Rackspace is somebody that I've been thinking about. I won't say whether this is a good or bad trend. I sort of have my opinion in higher ed. But lately I've been running across several companies that don't have anything to do with EDUCAUSE, and they absolutely despise CIOs and IT departments, and so they're marketing cloud-based applications directly to functional departments, and this is probably happening across your institution. And the particular one that I was dealing with and trying to find out something about them, I finally did figure out it was, essentially two guys in a rented room in Charlottesville, Virginia. But they were working with Rackspace, They were working with another data center. They had distributed their application and their data, both in terms of rack space and another data center out on the West Coast. They had built an infrastructure that was sound by all kinds of business continuity processes, by what they were doing for failover and redundancy. They had done all of these things. And I was sitting there looking at this incredibly innovative application that they had created. And they had created because they didn't need to go build a data center. They didn't need to go work in that direction. That they had been able to turn all of their innovation, much like the faculty members from Berkeley were saying, in using an infrastructure that they could scale up and down. And had started with 2 schools as customers and now have 170 schools as customers, you know, in a very fast way. So I look and say, to me, that's also the heart of education. That's what we were about. That's what our faculty are about, is ways to turn around and how can we help them innovate quickly and fast and move things and not worry about, you know, how fast it's going to scale or how we're going to handle it. I know that when I was at University of Texas at Austin, and people hear me say this all the time, that if you were going to launch a service, you knew on day one it had to be able to scale to 70,000 users. I mean, the minute you turned the switch and you were on. And so scale was absolutely a critical component of every decision you made. You couldn't afford to turn around and do something at a small level just to try it out and see if it was going to work for half of your group. Questions, comments?
Is this on? Yes. Robert Reno, Dickinson College. Pam, we've looked into cloud computing, very interesting opportunities there. One concern we have is the embryonic state of technical standards relating to cloud computing. Is that a concern of yours?
All of these things are concerns of mine. And what my bigger concern is, however, that I'm solving it and you're solving it, or we're trying to solve it, or we're looking at all of the reasons. I thought about the speech yesterday from Hamel when he's turning around and saying all these reasons for denial and rationalization. I don't have to go there because the standards aren't here. I don't have to go there because this doesn't work. Rather than turning around and going, this is the right direction we need to be going in, how do we put our resources and our time and our effort into fixing that problem? So yes, it's a concern. My concern is for fixing it. Other questions?
I'm just going to push back a little bit on
that.
I think when we're actually day-to-day making decisions with regard to our enterprise architecture, and we are dealing with technologies where the standards are at best fluid, it makes me very anxious to make business decisions in the absence of more solidity in that area. I know we're all working on it. That's a very good thing. But day-to-day, investing real money and putting your services on the line like that, perhaps I'm a more conservative end of the spectrum in this regard, and obviously you're not. But how would you comment on that?
I think we are at a time. The reason I like to look at the 1980 MIS directors is I think we are at a time that's very similar in many ways, that we have gotten invested into this business and it has become so mission critical in so many ways, and we are well aware of security and risk management and all of these issues, and that we have tied ourselves up in ways that we're scared to innovate in some ways, and that it is time to turn around and say we need to move forward and we're the ones who need to do that. Or perhaps, you know, I could say our students, faculty, and staff go around us. I mean, they will use the cloud. They will use applications. They will go find ways to turn around and say, if you're not delivering it, very much like people who brought microcomputers into Wall Street said their MIS departments were not responsive, so they just moved off in a different direction. So I think it is a risky business. I think it's important for us to talk to our cabinets, to our executive officers, to our trustees, to begin to explain what's going on in this field, what some of the risks are, and to turn around and say how we're trying to address these risks and move forward. Question.
Probably just some comments. Joel Cooper from Carleton College. I'll out myself for starters. Carleton built a new data center about 5 years ago. Our old one was a junk, really not very good, very inadequate. We would have cooling failures all the time, and that inconvenienced the campus. So we spent about $850,000 building one. We thought, you know, we might grow into it. Actually, have a reasonable amount of space now. So if you want to rent some, actually, okay. We're talking among some of the Minnesota colleges. You know, I've got a little space, not a lot. But perhaps we can aggregate things in that way. I don't think anybody at Carleton has any regrets about that investment. Our CFO is pretty happy about it. When the power goes off at Carleton right now, all the servers stay up, they stay cool. So I'm not sort of saying this was the greatest thing we ever did. I think it was a good idea at the time. We also planned in space to actually grow the data center if we needed it. We never will, and we'll be using that space for something else, probably to support the academic mission. So I agree. We're also in a rural area, so we didn't really have the luxury. I think my colleague from SUNY, we're in a similar situation. We couldn't just go to the cloud at the time. We didn't really have the bandwidth. We still don't have a second route out of town. So if somebody gets lucky with a backhoe, we have that issue as well. I think going forward, however, it's our priority to get redundant routes out of town. We'll have redundant ISPs in a couple of months. Those are things, I think, that are really kind of core. If you're going to put things out in the cloud, you've got to have that stuff in place. So anyway, we did it. I don't regret it. We probably will never build another one. We're also in a good spot. In the wintertime, we have free air conditioning. Minnesota, after all. We also have a wind turbine that produces electricity for the college. So we did some good things, but we'll certainly never build another one. And we'll probably be... including some of our other local institutions, housing things for them. So that's, again, sort of a cloudlet or a cloud for EDU or for Minnesota or something like that. So anyway, just some comments.
Well, and I think that fits. I mean, 3 years ago and 5 years ago, there may have been people beginning to look at this and say this may be in our future. I think it's far more realistic looking at it now to say what that future looks like than it would have been. And if you were building it 5 years ago, you were planning it earlier than 5 years ago. I'm arguing lots for turning around and saying putting shovels in the ground today, putting shovels in the ground and planning to do that a year or two or 3 years from now. We should be thinking seriously about taking those resources and all the thinking that's going to go on to and designing this data center that you want to build on this part of your campus and saying, what do I expect in finding somebody else's data center? And Joel's just made part of his available to people. So if Rackspace doesn't work, we can go to Carleton. Yes.
So Kyle Johnson, again, I like to get in line twice. Something I'm thinking of is I'm hearing a lot of schools talk about, you know, well, we have a data center or, you know, we're fearful of the APIs not being ready. You know, the commitment I've made at my institution is the data center I have is the last one I'll have. You know, we will never, ever, ever again build a data center. And I think for a lot of schools, that's a challenge I would put to you is to say don't try to necessarily, if you can't figure out how to get rid of your data center, just promise not to build another. And I think that would be a huge improvement. I think also you can think about doing it in smaller pieces. It is not an all or nothing thing. I mean, a lot of us have moved to Google Apps or Microsoft Live. Now, that's a small step. But if you can tackle a small project when the APIs and things are still kind of in flux, you can help to stabilize them so you can do more later. So. And a lot of IT staff will look at a project like that and say, well, can't do it because we can't do it all. Don't do it all then. Just do something.
I couldn't agree with you more about moving in that direction. That's what I've talked to my cabinet about. That's part of why I pursue every opportunity to try to move things out. No, I'm not going to move everything out tomorrow, as somebody was asking, and shut down my data center. I don't have that possibility yet, and it doesn't. There are lots of problems and issues to be resolved. But I've turned around and said, I'm not going to grow it. I'm not going to expand it. I'm actively looking. My first question when something comes up is, can it be remote hosted? Can we put this someplace else? Can I lease it from somebody? I mean, those are the questions I'm asking right off the bat to see, is this an option for the direction that we want to go in? This also lets you turn around and deal with the gentleman's issues about employees with sets of skills. I don't think turning around and saying our employees are not educable. I believe they are, and I believe people want to learn things. What they don't want to hear is that they have to learn a whole new set of skills in the next 3 weeks or their job's going to be eliminated. But when you can turn around and say, here's the direction we're headed, and we can tell you that 2 years or 3 years down the road, you know, we're going to have less need for people doing this, but here's where the need. This gives you time to invest in those employees and give you time to change their orientations and skills so you can move down the road toward accomplishing that. Questions, comments?
I'm Wendy Chen. I'm from Connecticut State University System. I want to know that have any of you ever considered PoPs, Performance Optimized Data Center? Those are modular data center prefabricated, and you can basically just put it in your parking lot. So.
You still own it. Has anybody considered using this concept? So this is a way of turning around, and there are a lot of people talking about this approach to data centers, this modular approach that lets you just build on piece by piece as you need it and put it down in other places. It's still sort of, I think about it like those pods that end up in your driveway that people are loading their furniture in. So I think it's a very interesting concept, and it's particularly playing well in institutions that just don't have any place. They need to expand some, but have no place to turn around and build a massively large or other data center. But it's still something that you own. Robert?
Robert Renaud. Pam, what additional costs do you see in this transition? For example, do you consider it necessary to have redundant ISPs?
We have redundant ISPs, but I have redundant ISPs with a data center. So I just, that was for me part of the cost of doing business and maintaining that all my services were up. So I don't really believe, I don't look at moving to cloud computing as a cost saver. I see it as helping me with opportunity cost. That if I'm paying somebody to rent or to use this service over here, then I'm using those employees or that time for something else. And I'm finding the biggest demand on my campus is an increasing demand for technology in everything from research to instruction to every kind of functional aspect to athletics to everybody wanting something with technology. And in a lot of ways, what they need is the analyst and the use person to sit down and help them understand what technology do they really need, what content do they really need, how do we connect and make it most effective for them. And that's what I need to spend my time and resources on. Any other data center comments? People promised me I would get yelled at. No, Kyle. I guess that's it.
Well, thank you, Pam. You sat in the hot seat very, very effectively.
I refuse to sit down. I think they have the seat wired was the whole reason they have these chairs up here. Thank you very much for coming.